Today I have Ted Fowler joining us from Westlab in Ballarat. Westlab is an importer and distributor of laboratory equipment from their headquarters in Ballarat, Australia-wide. Ballarat, in case you're wondering, is about an hour northwest of Melbourne in Victoria, Australia.
Okay, so Westlab, we've been in operation for just over 20 years. We're a specialist supplier of consumables, equipment, and storage to the laboratory industry. So we supply, our business is roughly split between schools, that's science in schools, industry, which consists probably largely of the food and beverage industry, and universities and research.
And do you distribute Australia wide?
Yes, so we supply laboratories throughout Australia, and most of our supply is direct to the end user.
Okay, and before any of this started, what size were you in terms of revenues roughly?
We're probably roughly about a $4 million business.
Okay. And what have you achieved so far in terms of growth total?
Well, in the last probably 2 to 3 years, we've basically doubled the size of the business. So we're on track for around a $9 million turnover. And we feel there's scope to grow a lot more with our current model.
Which isn't too bad.
Yeah.
Now, you're not in Sydney or Melbourne. Remind me, where exactly are you?
We're in Ballarat, Victoria, which is about an hour west of Melbourne. So we're in a regional centre, which obviously has its challenges, especially in terms of travel. We do now have a field specialist based in Sydney.
Yeah. So you must be you would be now one of the more significant businesses in Ballarat, I suspect.
In terms of overall size, yeah, we're getting up there.
That's amazing. And I guess what our
Good.
viewers are interested in is how exactly have you done it? I mean, the fact that I'm interviewing you, I guess would suggest that it has something to do with SPE.
Well, I'm just going to say, Justin, one key statistic to mention is you have TNT over there, the transport company.
Yeah, I think
Yeah.
so. I'm not sure. I think we do.
Yeah, we are their biggest customer in Ballarat. So in terms of number of parcels sent, we are their biggest.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
So has SPE played a part in that growth?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So d maybe start with a high level. Tell us what you've done over the last 3 years to achieve that growth, because coming close to doubling the size of the business in 3 years is nothing short of phenomenal. So give us a big picture, and then we'll zoom in and talk about various elements of that.
Yeah, well, I suppose our initial implementation of SPE was a partial idea. We had seen some snippets from your book on the machine. We introduced the idea of sales coordinators supporting field sales specialists. I guess what it basically was, we had somebody in the office, one person in the office for every person out on the road. And this person simply looked after making the appointments, a lot of the follow-up, a lot of the customer service queries that are coming in. So we operated as three teams. We each handled different geographical regions. And I guess there was a bit of healthy competition, which drove growth. There was probably an increase in activity. So that was really phase one. But what we found was that we can only reach a certain level with that model.
So you had three field salespeople, each were partnered up with an inside coordinator, is that right?
Correct.
And what sort of growth did you drive with that configuration?
We probably drive about between 30 to 40% growth. But it was quite a successful model.
Yeah, because I had not met you at that point. I think you'd been
No.
referred to the book by other people in the community. And by the time I think when we spoke for the first time, You said, oh, well, we've been following along the stuff in the book, and we've already increased sales by 30% was the number that I remember, which is nice to hear. That should have paid for the book.
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
Certainly
In fact, you probably hadn't even bought the book because it wasn't available at the time. So
No, I only had the first couple of chapters.
yeah, so it definitely paid for you to download the book. So what problem, I guess, had you to get an uplift of 30% just from pairing salespeople up with sales coordinators or BDCs as we call them nowadays? There was obviously a problem there that you solved. What was the problem?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think what it meant was we had much faster response to our clients' needs. So we worked at a fairly tightly knit team of two. As we went out to visit customers, we could tell our clients about our business BDC back in the office.
Yeah.
And they could form a relationship, develop a relationship with them. Which meant that, the customer got a better experience from us.
Okay, because so for things that were kind of transactional, they could talk directly to the sales coordinator.
Correct.
And
Absolutely.
did you have a separate customer service team at that time?
No, at that time we didn't, and that was probably one of the constraints of the whole thing.
Yeah. Because the BDCs essentially would have ended up turning into customer service reps.
Well, that's what happened. As the business grew. And the inquiries started flowing, and the quotes needed to be done. It became a bit of a never-ending story of, chasing up quotes, trying to make appointments,
Yeah.
and handling customer service queries
But
and things.
let's not go there yet. Let's talk about the problem that you solved with that first change. So the first change was partnering salespeople up with sales coordinators or BDCs. I'm guessing that would have had for you to experience that kind of growth, that would have had to have resulted in your salespeople spending more time in the field with customers.
Correct. There was a big uplift in activity.
So what sort of uplift in activity and what sort of impact on the amount of time that your salespeople spent in the field as opposed to not in the field?
It's stretching my memory a little bit now because it
Yes.
goes back 3 years.
It's probably painful to remember.
Yeah. But I think ultimately we were aiming, the three of us, we were aiming to be out on the road, as it were. Between 2 to 3 days per week, and we're probably seeing, 5 clients on those days, perhaps sometimes even more.
And is that with the coordinators or before you had them?
That's with them.
Okay, and
So
what were you doing before that?
before that it was very ad hoc. There were three of us kind of floating around where we felt we needed to be. We had a rough arrangement of territories, geographical territories. We monitored the sales per territory. And if we had felt we had a busy week and a lot on our schedule, we would spend a day back in the off a week back in the office
Okay.
out with clients. So what this
Okay.
did was
So the
it
sales
forced
coordinators
us.
got you out in the field, and it sounds like it enabled you to have a more structured approach to business development too,
Absolutely. Yes.
rather than just whenever you got to it.
Yes.
Okay.
The One of the problems we, well, I shouldn't talk about problems, but one of the limitations we experienced were some of the BDCs were better at customer service, others were better at making appointments. So we had this slight conflict of interest, you might say.
Yes, well, and that would have meant the salespeople who were partnered up with those BDCs would either suffer or benefit accordingly, depending on what the greater requirement was.
Yes, correct.
Okay, so that phase, if we call that phase one, where you increase sales 30%, how long did that take from when you started to when you called me and said, "Can you come in?"
I would say it was roughly 12 months.
Okay. That's actually, I remember you did say 12 months. Okay, so 12 months to achieve that. And then the problem was that your BDCs were getting busy with customer service work and you'd sort of hit that point of diminishing returns.
Yes, so we ran it for another probably 9 months, and we realized we were plateauing in terms of sales, and something had to change, and we thought we'd call in at that point. Take us to the next level.
Yeah. And I want to say I was in the UK when I spoke to you for the first time. I'm not sure exactly, but I think I might have been in the UK. I remember, I mean, I wish it was the kind of conversation that I had every day where somebody calls and says, look, I'd like to run a workshop with you. You know, you've already increased our business 30% before we even met you. There's not a lot of selling required from my perspective. If everyone rang up like that, it'd be fantastic. So I came out and I ran a 2-day workshop with you guys, and I'm guessing it was maybe a shock to the system because the model we ended up proposing was quite different from the one that you currently had. Were you surprised, or were you kind of expecting that after reading the book?
No, I was somewhat surprised actually. Yeah, I thought we had been quite on track. I never realized that we were, had a long way to go in implementing the full system.
So maybe relate to people who are watching what the differences were between the model that we ended up with. And we built it together. It wasn't just like I floated in and stirred things up for the sake of being controversial. We kind of worked through it together, I think. But tell people the differences between what you had and what we ended up designing in that workshop.
Well, I think the key takeaway we got from that was we needed to have a dedicated customer service team, which we split off immediately. At that stage, I think we had two people dedicated to customer service in our new model. And what we made their role was purely reactive. So they were reacting to inbound calls, requests for quotations. We also identified within that customer service team a bids and tenders role. So this particular person focuses very much on larger quotes, specialist tenders and that kind of thing. And that's a role we want to further develop because we see huge potential in it. We then reduced our field sales team at that stage actually to one person, which was myself. And
That's
we,
why you have business development manager on your,
But we also employed, recognized we're doing a lot of traveling, and we thought it would be handy to have a field specialist based in the Sydney region. So we employed a lady up there within probably a month or so of your interview, who is pretty much full time in the field with clients. We also identified a key role as a field scheduler. So we had somebody pretty much full time on field scheduling, looking after the two field specialists, arranging their calendars.
Okay, so I think we're going to lose people here. Let's go wind back and go a little slower. So let's just talk about customer service first, and because I think we'll need to explain to people why you needed a field specialist and what the difference was between a BDM and a field specialist. But on customer service first. So you built a customer service team. I think you said you added a was it a bids and tender specialist to that team? Okay, and the customer service reps, they are responsible for what?
Right. So every inbound call that comes in, they are the front line. They can generally, well, most times they quote there and then. That means we're highly responsive to the customer. The customer will get a quote immediately. Any, you might say, customer service queries such as tracking of freight, following up of orders, they're there to help. We've identified people who are good in that role. They do a limited amount of follow-up of quotes, but that is largely tasked across to the internal sales team. They also do, however, what they do is they manage a lot of the quotes for the internal sales team. So when a quote request arises through perhaps a proactive sales call, they task that across to the customer service team, prepare the quote, email it or post it or whatever to the customer, arrange for samples to be sent.
Yeah, so they're okay, so sending samples has gone to customer service, and
Correct.
issues too, I guess, have gone to customer service.
Yes.
So your inbound call traffic originates in customer service. Most of it ends up being handled in customer service because I guess most of it's transactional.
Yes. And what we have seen is a the customers are delighted with that customer service team. They feel they're highly responsive. Where we were a little bit worried was potentially breaking the relationship between that we had formed between the customers and the BDCs.
Yes. And did any customers react negatively to, you know, losing their single point of contact?
It was the exception rather than the rule. There were a few who struggled to understand the concept. But I think once they experienced the, you know, the customer service team and their fast reaction, those fears were dispelled pretty quick.
It reminds me, I was actually living in Australia when automated telling machines were being introduced, and I remember pundits on the radio or on the TV talking about how it was going to destroy people's relationship with banking tellers, and you know how it was the end of the world as we know it. And it's amazing how quickly people discovered that they'd rather interact with a machine than a person, especially if that machine's operating 24/7.
Yes, exactly.
And I think in your case, you've reduced the friction significantly for simple transactions.
Yeah.
So when does a customer service representative escalate to inside sales? And does that happen?
We have a threshold in terms of dollar value of quotes.
Okay.
So I think it's around the $500 mark.
Okay.
They will escalate a follow-up to the internal sales team.
So the inside sales does a follow-up on certain quotes.
Yes.
And if somebody calls in with a problem, will they escalate that to the inside sales team as well?
They'll go as far as they can in sorting that problem out.
Yes.
Yes, they might have a discussion internally. We have daily huddle or work meetings where those sort of issues can get escalated.
Actually, sorry, I didn't mean a problem with your services. I meant a problem that needs solving. So, you know, I'm guessing generally what happens is we see two types of inquiries hitting customer service. One is where somebody says, look, I want to order one of these, and they know roughly what they want. And the other is where somebody calls and says, hey, I have a problem. I don't know how to solve it. Do you guys have a solution?
Oh, I see. Yeah, I'd have to check on that, Justin. But I believe they would raise that either by email or they sit pretty close in proximity. So
yeah.
Refer to the internal team.
Okay, so let's introduce the notion of inside sales, because previously you had sales, a couple, two or three salespeople in the field and customer service representatives. The biggest change I think that came out of the workshop was I suggested to you, hey, you guys, maybe you should have a dedicated inside sales team. So that was probably a radical idea, because until now, sales had been something that was predominantly done in the field. How did that idea strike you at the time? And what have you done since?
Yeah, it was a fairly radical change of thinking. We actually pulled two very successful, you might say, field salespeople back into the office. We are very focused on reaching our 30 meaningful sales interactions with clients every day. What it meant was we dramatically increased the amount of contact we were having with our clients. We had three inside salespeople on the team, plus a field scheduler who sits with the team.
So where did the three inside salespeople come from? Two of them you pulled in from the field.
Correct. And another, Anthony was, he was doing a lot of support internally on the sales front. And we moved him in, gave him a dedicated target of calls per day, which he's very focused on. And between them, they're regularly pumping out 90. Well, pretty much every day, they're doing 90 sales interactions.
So, with three people in the field previously, I'm guessing you probably weren't quite averaging four meetings a day, or were you?
We probably were, but we're probably only doing that. I think we were doing between 12 and 15 customer visits per week.
So 12 to 15 per week across three people. Now you've got three people inside.
And that's 12 each. 12 each.
12 each. Okay.
We're probably doing in the region of 30 to 40, perhaps just a little bit over 40 sometimes, actual face-to-face visits per week.
So you've gone from 2.5 conversations per person per day to 30 conversations per person per day.
Correct, yes.
Now, what observations do you have about the quality of those conversations? In what cases and to what extent does quality suffer? Are you finding when you talk to people on the phone as opposed to going and seeing them in the flesh?
Well, we did have a 2-day telephone sales training course, which I could recommend to anyone, which I think helped just in terms of general approach to customers, how to speak to customers. It's probably an area we need to work on, but I would say we're probably about 50% effective calls and the other 50% non-effective. However, it's very hard to qualify what is an effective call.
Yeah, but I guess what I'm curious about is, in the past, if you had gone and visited a person face to face and had a good productive conversation, and now you visit that person on the telephone rather than face to face, the same person, let's assume, is the how of you know, and you, let's say you did that 10 times in a row over a period of time. Of those 10 conversations that you have on the phone as opposed to in the field, how many of them are less effective because you're on the telephone, and to what extent are they less effective, do you think?
Oh, I see what you mean. There's not a whole lot of difference. There's certain discrete activities which you cannot perform on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, you physically can't show somebody a product, if and feel and touch it on the phone. But there's a lot that can be done on the phone. And one of the areas we found especially effective via phone and email is closing of sales.
Mm-hmm.
It's not easy to sit in front of somebody and close the deal always.
Yes.
It's easier to do it over the phone or by email, especially when there's negotiation involved. Does that make sense?
Yes, it's a bit hard to ring. It's a bit hard to ring someone and say, "Can I have permission to come and sit in your office and move the paper while you hold the pen?"
Yes, exactly.
But you can ring them up and say, "Dude, where's the PO?"
Exactly, and often people aren't prepared to make a decision when they're sitting right in front of you. They've got to go away and talk to somebody or, you know, get another signature. But you can find them every 10 minutes about it.
Yeah, so this is an important point. I don't want to let this slip by. What your feeling is that there hasn't been a meaningful or a material degradation in the quality of meetings. You've simply discovered there are certain activities that you have to do in the field for physical reasons. But in the exception of those, when you exclude those, there hasn't really been a noticeable degradation in the quality of the interactions.
No, not at all. No.
But of course, the volume of interactions has gone from, what do we say, 2.5 per day per person to 30 per day per person.
Correct.
So that's more than an order of magnitude increase in the volume of activity. I mean, that's significant. In other words, to dramatize that a little more, to achieve that increase with your old model, you would have to employ 9 more salespeople and 9 more sales coordinators for every one salesperson and sales coordinator you had at the end of phase one.
Correct, yeah.
Which would have been somewhat expensive.
Very.
And you would have run out of people to employ in Ballarat.
Yes.
Okay. So that's pretty significant. Now, these activities that need to be performed in the field, you have a field scheduler who is pushing them to someone. Who does those activities in the field?
Two of our two field specialists. So at this stage, myself, and we have Raki, who's based in Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
Because pretty much Sydney and Brisbane. Now, we do have identified in a subsequent meeting with you that we need to probably refine what those field activities are.
Mm-hmm.
We have a few changes coming up in that our field scheduler is actually leaving.
The demarcation, we talked about the fact that demarcation isn't as clean as we'd like it to be.
No, we need to make sure those field activities are very relevant. As you said, you can have a mix of, discrete activities that have to be performed out there. It might be a demonstration, showing a customer an article, and might be account reviews to fill the gaps. But we do need to sit down, which we're actually doing later today, and identify what are those roles that we want our field team to actually be performing.
So what has been the consequence of firing up the inside sales team and generating that significant increase in the number of meaningful selling interactions that we were just talking about? What's it done to sales? And have there been any negative consequences?
No, well, as I said, in the past 12 months, we've probably seen another, 30%, close to 30% increase in sales. What we're finding is there's a stronger team atmosphere. Instead of having three teams all trying to hit their own goals and outperform one another, we've actually got the whole team focused on one goal now, and that's to get every order over the line. So we're finding just being in a hub together, working closely, speaking to one another, there's a very strong synergy in the team, and it's getting results. For instance, we have a hot list of opportunities, which are key ones we want to pull over for the month or the week, and the whole team's focused on those, thus obviously generating new opportunities, new leads and opportunities.
And how difficult is it to maintain those 30 conversations a day?
How do they maintain them?
Yeah, how difficult is it to maintain them day after day?
It takes a bit of sweat, but I think what we've tried to identify is we put a table tennis board in the office, and we do the sprint, use the sprint formula. So they do have a concentrated period of calls,
Yes.
and then they stop and relax for a few, perhaps 10 minutes, have a game of table tennis, get back into it.
Do you literally have a table tennis table?
Literally do,
Excellent. Yeah.
So if you've been on the phone for an hour and you're starting to feel a bit worn out, speak to your mate next to you and ask him if he wants a quick game.
Yeah. We're big fans of that. I think I said when I was with you that, people perform better when they sprint and then relax. And I think pretty much all of our clients, I'll talk about this in a second, you're not actually a client of ours in a formal sense of the word. So when I talk about clients, I'm typically talking about people who, pay us a monthly fee and have us in there working hands-on on their processes. But really, you guys have done all this yourselves. Initially, just with the only input from me was, of course, reading the chapters of the book, and then subsequently, I ran that 2-day workshop, and I, gave you a model on a piece of paper and said, "Hey, build this." And you've gone ahead and done it all. No, that you don't have any of our technology in there, you don't have any of our creative in there, and you haven't had one of our consultants in there, and you've almost double sales. If I can make a comment, and it's always interesting to me. I think we've got two interviews on my blog now where organizations have, doubled sales, implementing the ideas in the book by themselves. And certainly that kind of increase outperforms a lot of organizations that we would actually work with hands on. Now, in some cases, if we're working with a $2 billion business, doubling sales is a little bit tough, but nonetheless, it's fascinating for me to see organizations implementing this by themselves achieve better results than some of the organizations we're working with hands-on. And I don't know if you can. I'll ask you in a second. I'm not sure if you can add much to that because you haven't experienced both models. But I guess my feeling would be that you guys, and I've seen this before with other organizations that have great results, including the other one on the blog that's done a similar increase. You guys have done a remarkable job of keeping it simple. Like you read the book and you implemented it the way it was described in the book. You didn't allow yourselves to get caught up in technology or the finer details. And again, after the initial workshop, you simply did it. I mean, There were no change management workshops or no special counseling for people, but you simply, did it. And it fascinates me that some organizations require enormous amounts of external intervention, and other organizations just roll up their sleeves and do it. Do you have any idea what might be the difference?
I think you've got to, we believe in the principle of it, and we're probably a small enough team and work closely enough to be able to implement it without ruffling too many feathers. I'll make this comment that it doesn't, change doesn't happen without a few,
Broken eggs.
that's it. That's it. That's what I'm looking
No
for.
omelets without broken eggs.
But if you believe in something and prepare to stick at it, and you see the results, it all starts looking worthwhile, doesn't it?
Sure, but when we talk about broken eggs, let's be concrete here. I am suspecting that not too many people have, resigned. Has anyone resigned?
No, nobody has.
And have you had to lead anyone out the back and, put them to
No,
sleep?
we've
No?
monitored each area carefully.
Yeah.
Just to make sure no, there's nobody, single area that's overloaded.
So no one's resigned and no one's been dismissed.
No, and one thing I would say is the actual stress of the whole thing has reduced somewhat because in the past, and I know from personal experience, as a field rep, you might say, let's go back to our previous model, supported by a BDC, every customer service query was our own. We managed it, we owned it. Every lead was our own. It was highly stressful if you had problems with a customer. Now what happens is we're a very efficient team who's straight onto it. They're handling all the day-to-day problems before they escalate into major problems. In fact, they're turning many of them into sales opportunities. So I would say overall, we've actually reduced the amount of stress levels because we have persons who are performing activities. We're in the right seat in the bus, basically. So issues are getting handled effectively and fast. Follow-up of quotes is getting done quickly. The field specialists are able to focus on the client without having all these problems in the back of their mind. And we're each performing our activities with a clear mind.
How many people would there be left in the business, do you think, who, given the chance, would want to revert things back to the way they were previously?
Oh, I don't think anybody would. I think we've seen the runs on the board. Think we'll stick with our model and improve it.
Excellent. Well, it's
Yeah.
a great story. So, roughly how long from when you first read those first three chapters of The Machine to today? How many years are we
Oh,
talking?
probably 3 years. Yeah, coming
3 years
on 3 years.
total.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an awesome story, Ted.
Yes. One thing I will mention is, whilst a lot of the success can be attributed to the additional activity and the streamlining of activity, we did implement other areas to give credit to everyone, our website particularly. So we focused very much on reducing friction in transactions.
And it's not just a website, it's an e-commerce platform, I think. You'd had quite a bit of uplift from e-commerce.
We have, yes, and we're improving that, taking that to the next level again, but we have one of the outcomes of a lot of our face-to-face discussions and internal sales discussions is simply getting people set up on the website for ordering. We've introduced things like a chat, online chat, and we make sure our customer service team is highly responsive to that. So there's somebody watching it all the time. I've literally gone into clients and said, right, let's set up a login for you so you can log in and get your pricing online. And what we do is we pull up the chat box on their computer. We type in, hello, customer service, please send me a login. And within, 30 seconds, there's a response, here's your login. We log in and we're ready to go.
Yeah, excellent.
They can change the password once in, of course. But it demonstrates to them that we have a highly responsive team and it sets them up for future ordering. So that's a discrete activity, you might say, that you can perform face to face. You can remove the friction for ordering, and the chances are you won't have to visit that customer for another 12 months.
Excellent. So one thing you're going to have to watch out for, Ted, is you are going to be hot property in your sort of business community. Everyone's going to want a piece of you as they start to realize the success that you've had, and you're going to have to be careful that you don't get dragged away from the business too much.
Absolutely. We'll make sure of that. I have a full schedule.
You can tell I'm speaking from experience here, Ted.
Very
So
good.
it's a great story. I'm really happy for you.
Good. Does that
And
cover most of the key points?
it covers everything. It's awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the time. This has been awesome.
Good. Okay.
And I look forward to talking to you at the beginning of phase three, I guess it'll be on the next go
Yeah.
around.
We're starting to move to the next phase now, so
Good on
yeah.
you. Good on you. Thank you, Ted.
Good.
All the best. Bye-bye.